You're listening to Civcast on the Kyle Dempster Studios Network. Support us on Patreon at patreon.com/Civcast. Well, hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Civcast. My name is Kyle, and I am joined here today by my co-host, Dan. Hello, Dan.
Good morning.
And we're also joined here by our awesome recent addition to the show, Valter. Hello, Valter.
Hey, Kyle.
I hate to say it. I feel like I'm like, is it a recent addition? I am trying to make a good way to bring you both onto the show. And I think it's working out. The three of us are really, really meshing well for this. I'm really enjoying having all these different thoughts on the show. It gives a lot of new lifeblood to it. And it really seems like our listeners are digging it, too. Valter, do you want to maybe talk a little bit about the Reddit? Because you came on the show recently. You'd been our guest host for a couple episodes. We brought you on full time here. And you've taken over working on our Reddit page, which is our Civcast. You want to talk about what's been going on there the last week?
Yeah, so I post, of course, the new Civcast challenge over there, but also had some questions that I love to answer always. And we had some nice interactions with some people, and it's the easiest way to get in contact with me for a more elaborate question than by Twitter, because Twitter only has 140 characters, and Reddit, I don't know what the limit is. I still have to reach it, I think.
Infinite! I don't know what their actual... There's probably a limit somewhere, but make it our listeners' goal to try and hit that. Actually, that sounds like a lot of reading for you, so maybe not.
Well, by all means, if they want to try, feel free.
You hit that limit. Once you hit that limit, then you let us know. And
one caveat, though, it all needs to be sensical. It must be actually some content related to civilization or the podcast itself. Beyond that, no limits. Go ahead.
What if they don't use any punctuation like some people tend to do on Reddit? That's always my favorite.
It will just be more difficult for me to read, but
just upvote the crap out of it.
There you go.
Exactly. Dan knows how Reddit works.
Yeah. Hey, it's episode 25, guys. That feels kind of landmarky to me. That's pretty cool. I don't know why it seems like a big number, but 25 episodes under our belt is pretty cool, in my opinion. And I think it's a good time to catch up on just some loose ends here. Dan, in just a minute, I'll pass it to you to talk about the Civcast challenge. But first, I think this is kind of related to the Reddit conversation. Saw some people. Last week I had mentioned, you know, we're not going to devote too much time on the show to talking strategy. That's something that we're listening to feedback all the time, and something we're very open to working with in different ways. I didn't mean to scare anybody. It's not like we're going to kick all strategy off of the show. Just wanted, sometimes we get these emails, a lot of them, that will be like, oh, please talk about this civ in detail. And sometimes that can be a little bit hard for the content of our show, because we typically cover fresh news and also use it a lot to talk about new ideas more so than rehashing pure strategy. So I didn't mean to scare anybody. Don't worry. We're still going to talk about some strategy. Actually, it's going to be probably the central point of this episode. But I just wanted to reassure everyone. I can also use this to segue and say, if you've been watching our subreddit, if you've been watching me on Twitter and all kinds of stuff, I've been asking people if they have any input on our Patreon. That's patreon.com/Civcast. We put our heads together collectively, the three of us today, and came up with some really cool new tiers and new ways we're going to implement that. So if you're already a patron, you are actually probably, yeah, you're just getting more stuff than you were getting before. And if you're someone that's interested in subscribing, we really hope these catch you. I'm going to rehash these quickly, and the updates will be up there hopefully by end of day, I'll get them all up there. But first of all, for $1, you're getting access to the Patreon feed. For $3, you're going to get access to all of our cold open stuff. This is stuff that we haven't released before. This is the three of us rambling for probably 10 to 15 minutes before the show as we put our ideas together and all of that. So that's something we've never offered before. If you're someone that just really enjoys what we're doing, cool way to get into it. For $5 a month, you're going to get Dan's historical extra, which we're going to start recording on a monthly basis. For $10, Valter's doing a strategy session, which is going to be very, very cool and something I definitely need to sign up to listen to. And then we're going to try something out here for a larger tier. We are going to do a multiplayer game once a month. We're going to have to set probably a time to actually do it so that people can make sure to be in for it. But we're going to try and do a multiplayer game once a month with our patrons. We've had a lot of requests for it, and I saw a lot of people on Twitter being interested in the idea. So check out the Patreon page if you are interested in doing that. Subscribe, and we'll get you into a multiplayer game. But in the sake that I'm not rambling constantly, Dan, can you alleviate me and tell me all about the latest CivCast challenge and what's happening over there?
Absolutely. And Vouder informed me that there was a lot of feedback on this on the subreddit, which is great to see. So keep that coming. With regards to the CivCast challenge itself, it is a much more kind of streamlined challenge, I guess you could say. This month, we're doing a 1v1. You will be playing Australia, and you're going to play against a random AI. By the way, did either of you guys get a chance to start this scenario and try it yet?
Yeah, I did.
Who did you get as your enemy?
I got Cynthia, which was horrible.
Yeah, that would be.
That's awful. I did not start it yet. I actually just played my first like real trial game of Australia yesterday. Maybe I'll get into this challenge today.
I started mine, and I rolled straight into America as the save that I'm going up against. So not necessarily a powerhouse in this game, so I'm feeling semi-confident about it, and I'm probably going to go for a religious victory if possible. But that being said, with regards to the CivCast challenge, all victory types are enabled with the exception of the score victory, so the four main victory types. I do know that some people were saying that on Twitter and on Reddit that, you know, they tended towards religious victory because it's a little quicker, or maybe domination victory as opposed to culture or science. And that all makes sense, which is go with your gut, go with what the map enables you to do. All the resources and start bias and everything is standard. The map size, as Wouter illuminated me on, I think incorrectly said tiny last week, and tiny is the four-person map. So the map that you want to look for is the appropriately named dual map, which is just a two-person map. So keep playing, keep those coming, keep sending us the updates on it. We have had a few fantastic Twitter updates this week using the hashtag CivCastChallenge. Please keep doing that. Those are always great to read. And that goes on throughout the month of March. So there's still plenty of time for you to start one up, to delve into it, and even to try more than one. If you're not happy with, you know, the way that your first one worked out, maybe, you know, God forbid you lost, maybe you won on like turn 100, which hint, hint, isn't super competitive with some of our all-stars on Twitter, then you can give it a reroll and see if maybe you luck into, I don't know, going up against the Congo, which should allow for a super easy religious victory.
Yeah, I'm really liking the move to this this monthly basis for it. It feels to me like we're getting more people playing, and definitely to your point, Dan, definitely seeing more people retry, which I think is awesome. I mean, that's we're here to give people some ideas of what to play. And shout out! Oh, I'm just going to shout this out right now instead of waiting like I should be doing. But who wrote in? Someone. Okay, this is why I should be doing this in order. But someone wrote in, and I'll find your name eventually, but wrote in and really thanked us for expanding their horizons. They said that they are a big Civ player over the years.
Thomas
thanked us for, yeah, it's right here. Anyway, thanked us for getting him into new things, and I think that's awesome. That's the goal of it. CivCast Challenge is supposed to get you into a game you would not usually play. So hopefully we can keep expanding people's horizons in that way.
Yeah, that's the goal of it. We do want to try getting them, not just to try out new civs, but new scenarios, new play styles. And in the near future, we'll be rolling out some CivCast challenges that maybe might be a bit more immersive and, shall we say, inclusive of the community. Ooh. But we'll get some more info on that as time goes by, probably in April or May.
Oh, excellent. I am very excited for this. And by the way, I just updated the website, everyone, so it lists the correct map size. So just as a reminder, that's kyledempsterstudios.com/CivCast. So now you actually see the correct map type up there. My bad. Took me so long to update it. But it is done right here, right now. I want to touch on something. Hashtag rant here. Wouter, I think on Reddit, we had a person write in to say that TuneIn, which is a way to get our show, TuneIn was not listing all of our episodes correctly. that has been a little bit of a thorn in my side this past week or so, trying to get that fixed. They are not, how do I say this politely? They keep sending me very scripted responses, which I don't really appreciate from customer service sort of things. Like, I'll ask a pointed question, like, can you explain this? Or can you, you know, tell me X, Y, and Z? And they just send me, like, the most generic response. They lied to me last night, too, which I really, really don't appreciate. And I think we're going to drop support for them. They, first of all, told me that the problem was that our feed was broken and it wasn't working. However, they were the only place we syndicate to that was not listing these episodes. And then when I, at the request of our podcast host, they're like, well, you should ask if they've been crawling our RSS feed and things like that. So for anyone that's in the know about how podcasts work, you might be getting this. But so I asked them this pointed question, and then they told me that it was that the feed was that they had the wrong feed listed for our show. So if you're a tune-in listener, you, first of all, are not getting this episode to begin with, if that's the only way you get the show. But if you are a TuneIn listener that's listening to another source, I hate to say it, but we're not really going to be supporting TuneIn in the future. It's just, it's a very hard thing to submit and get our show updated for. So I just wanted to let everyone know up front that we tried, I worked on it, and it's really out of my hands. Unfortunately, the internet gods don't like TuneIn, and TuneIn doesn't like us, so... here's to whatever that is. But anyway, we are on iTunes, we're on Google Play, we're on Stitcher, and there's ways to subscribe if you're an Android listener straight from our website. We also have just a flat-out web streaming service there, and that's all listed on the page, so hopefully that doesn't hinder anyone too much. I just wanted to give follow-up to our loyal listeners trying to get it through TuneIn that unfortunately out of our hands. Main topic today, getting off of the little tune-in rant, our main topic is something Dan found for us last week on Reddit, posted by user Ender Nor, if I'm reading that correctly. He or she posted a graph on the most popular civilizations in Civ 6 until now, and followed up by posting some of the most popular civilizations in Civ 5. I think we came together and thought this would be an awesome topic for the show. I think, Dan, do you want to kind of explain a little bit of the background about this, if you, since you dug it up to begin with?
Sure. I found this on Reddit when I was crawling the Sid Meier's Civ Reddit, which I do pretty much on a daily basis. And I always love seeing statistical outlays like this. I think it's quite fantastic because I don't know about you, but this is the kind of thing where back in the day, I remember when I would play games like World of Warcraft or League of Legends or whatever, I would always love looking at the stats to see who the most played classes or champions were. And then I'd look at the inverse. I'd look at who the least played were. And I'd go and play those because I'd try and figure out, you know, what it was about these champions or classes or civs or whatever that made them less, I guess, inspiring to people. Mm-hmm. So, you know, graphs like this are always fascinating to me. And I guess I'll start off the conversation by throwing it back to you guys. The most played Civ to this point in Civ 6 by, you know, a decent margin is Rome. And I always have found Rome to be, you know, powerful in these games, but maybe just unappealing because of the familiarity I have with them, mm-hmm. and the fact that I see a lot of their stuff as being maybe a bit recycled if you're a veteran of RTSs. So the question, I guess, that I'll toss to Wouter first is, Rome is the most played Civ in Civ 6 right now. Do you see that as being strategically justifiable, or do you see that maybe as more being something where people are historically or personally familiar with the aesthetic and setup of the Civ?
I think for most European people who don't have their own current nation in the game, there might be some of like a nostalgia feeling towards, oh, Rome, that was close here and awesome, let's play that. Mm. But I think a large part of it is it is relatively strong and newbie friendly. And especially that last part, I think, will contribute a lot to why people like playing as Rome.
I like that point, Valter. Yeah. I heard some of that in the early days when Civ 6 was still being announced and we were getting all those Let's Play videos for the very first time. I feel like I saw a lot of that coming from people is, I'm playing Rome first. They're absolutely my first go-to. And I think, Valter, to your point, they have a lot of, you know, generalized strengths, maybe. And maybe if you're more familiar, I admit I haven't played Rome in many, many months in Civ 6, so you guys might be able to speak to their actual in-game combat and strengths better than I can. But it does seem like they're a well-rounded Civ, so maybe that's an appeal. But Valter, I like how you said logistically or geography-wise, they are maybe someone's home in a way.
I think that's also a reason why America is number three on the list. People who live in the United States of America probably want to play as their home country, at least. If the Netherlands were in the game, I would definitely play more than one game as the Netherlands just because it's the Netherlands. And that goes for a lot of people. And it's also always a lot of arguments like, why is my nation not in the game yet? It has this amazing history and stuff like that. People like to play the nation they're living in. They have that kind of nationalistic feeling about it a little bit, and that works its way into the game as well.
And I do think that was I don't want to say that was the direct impetus for Australia's inclusion in the game, but the people at Firaxis are smart enough to know that if you've got a large market for a game, you know, they're going to be clamoring to buy DLC that is their Civ. And I do know that the Australia update has been pretty well received and pretty well downloaded, judging by statistics and feedback. So I mean, they're clever guys. They know that if they include something like Babylon or Indonesia, you might not get as much of a positive bounce as you do if you include something like Australia. So in that sense, they were smart. The least played Civ of the non-downloaded ones, I mean, excluding Poland and Australia, the least played Civ on this statistical outlay was Spain. I like Spain. Historically, I find them interesting, and I enjoy their play style in this game. But I guess I'll throw it to Kyle first on this. I don't think that you have familiarity playing Spain, but I do know you've come up against them significantly. Do you see Spain's low play numbers as being strategically justifiable and or understandable?
That's an interesting question. First of all, I have yet to play America in this game, and that's where I reside. What does that say about me? I start off with England. And that's, to your point, Dan, where I ran into Spain a lot, because I really like to recreate the colonization sort of game. So I put in a lot of people that historically would come into conflict with one another. Like, I put in a lot of the big European players. So I'll play as, like, Egypt. Wow, way to look at the thing and say what I'm reading. I play as England, but I'll put in France, Spain, Russia, stuff like that, like big people that clashed. So running up against Spain quite a bit, his AI really ran circles around me for many games when I was playing as England. He would often get ships out there faster than I would. So, and I actually just recently ran into him in a game. He's very, very religious focused. I'd be curious to see if there were statistics saying what play style people like to go to. Like, what is their go-to? Do they play religious most, or, you know, do they go for something else? Because he, with his conquistador units getting strength, I think if they're fighting against someone with a different religion, that's if memory serves. He's very, very religious focused, which is why I've never played. We all know that Kyle doesn't like the religious game. So I don't know. I don't know if that justifies him being last on the list. I feel like people like the religious game, so I don't know why they wouldn't go with him.
Now they do. And looking at Treasure Fleet too, which is his unique ability, you know, the fact that it's very specific to fleets and armadas and trade routes between multiple continents, it just might not be conducive to any sort of benefit if you're playing on a map like Pangaea, which I know Valter always talks about. So the Conquistador is strong. I have played them and I like the mission, which is their unique building too. I find them to not be overpowered per se, but I don't necessarily think they would be justified as being super low down on the list. I also think there's a few outliers on this list too. If you look at it, like you talk about familiarity breeding increased plays, and in one sense that's true. You know, everyone's familiar with some of the higher civs and the play style, like China Russia, America. But then there are some civs who you think would get more playtime who are a little lower down. And I look specifically at England with this. England is on the bottom half of the play distribution here. And I would think that people would be familiar with a civ mainstay like England, although they do change from game to game. So I know that we're going to talk about England here. What do you guys think about that? Do you see that as being just like something where people are underwhelmed with the Royal Navy Dockyard, or underwhelmed with her abilities, which are admittedly
so many
not plans. The most sexy abilities.
I just want to make a quick caveat here for the people listening about the graph that we're talking about. The graph itself is based upon the Steam achievements, which means it's not the amount of games that are necessarily played with the civilization, but the games finished. And if you finish multiple games with one civ, it doesn't get added extra to it. It's about the achievement that you unlock when you actually finish a game as that civilization.
Interesting. Where did you see that caveat? I don't see that on the graph.
I think I read that in the comments. And as for England, I didn't complete a game as England, so I don't have that achievement. So that wouldn't be counted in there as well.
That's such an important caveat. I, you know, didn't even think about that. What do they say? Because you're right, Voucher. I remember reading some of the comments, and I feel like that was down there. Actually, someone asks here. It looks like, yeah, I mean, I'm not going to read this all on air, but it looks like you're right. It's related to finishing it. So if that's the case, I don't know if I've ever finished a game of Civ 6. That's just not me. I'm a start and stop sort of guy. I'm more of a sandbox player, if I may. So I guess I've contributed nothing to this graph. You know,
and that's the thing. About 38.7% of all the people who own the game have won a game at settler difficulty or harder, and that's the lowest difficulty. So from that, you can extrapolate that only 38.7% of the people who own the game have actually finished the game.
But I do see this distribution as being kind of true to life. I mean, if you look at the similar distribution graph for Civ 5 that Kyle shared with us, it makes sense when you look at it, because the higher up civs are the ones that I would see the most in multiplayer and are the ones that I know are the most accessible and easy to play, whereas the lower ones, civs like Indonesia or Polynesia, I know people didn't necessarily gravitate towards. So to that end, I get what you're saying, but I think that it's a statistical trend that you could extrapolate writ large. I do think that, you know, Rome, Germany, America, China, these are new player friendly civs as well, right? Like if you look at India, Brazil, or Spain, or even a civ like Norway or the Congo, those are not new player friendly. So that might lead to people kind of shying away from them in the, you know, in their early playthroughs.
Yeah, so to kind of lead us into this conversation, we had Edward write into the show, and he said, I personally love England. It's one of the best civs in Civilization VI, in my opinion. One of my friends, though, told me that England sucks compared to every other civ. I would love it if you guys
Wrong.
Could go in depth as to why England is great at domination or even cultural snowball civ. But, you know, you say wrong, but one of the funny things is there was a chart, and I'm referencing way back in the show, way, way back when Civ 6 first came out, someone ranked the civs, and I don't know what metric they used to rank them all, but they were one of the ones that they immediately called out Germany as being like the most powerful civ in Civ 6 due to their strengths. And you know, maybe this has changed with patches and things like that, but England did not fall in close to the top. In fact, if memory serves, and I'm just citing memory here, I think they were very close to the bottom of the list, saying that they just did not have cohesive playing strengths. And I know Voucher and I had friendly banter last night where we kind of disagreed about where their strengths lie. And for me, and this is just opinion and just probably my issue lies in what I want the heart of England to be. Because for me playing this, my reasoning for wanting to play England is just what I said. I like to do the historical conflict. So in my opinion as England, I want to, they get a lot of their strengths from settling different continents. But I find in this game, I have a hard time actually, especially in the earlier ages of the game, when you're struggling to get into the ocean to begin with, I have a hard time trying to determine how many settlements I need to put on my home continent, because most of their things are if you settle your city on a different continent, then you're going to get a bonus unit automatically. And if you settle there and put your Royal Navy dockyard down, then it gets +2 gold per turn, but not if it's at the home continent. And then even the colonialism civics that you look at later on in the game, those are also dependent on being on a different continent. And for me, that throws a weird, I don't know, wedge in my play style. And I don't know, maybe these England perks are a bit situational. That's at least how I see them. Where you guys stand on any of that?
Yeah, I mean, they're not, and I'll just be really quick on this. They're not super, like I was saying before, sexy either. I mean, British Museum, Wouter said the past is super strong, and it is. But what appeal does British Museum have to you if you're going for a domination victory? I think very little. And then both their unique unit and their unique building, the Sea Dog and the Royal Navy Dockyard, you're looking at, you know, naval-specific strategy there. So it's situational. It's powerful if it is appropriate to your situation. But you're right, it is situational.
Wouter? The king of strategy.
So back to the tier list. I found it. And England is actually listed as below average tier for a deity game.
Can you link
and
that?
I think, yeah. And I Thank think you. They actually dropped that, should drop that lower, because this was from the full patch in 2016. And with the fact that harbors and commercial districts don't both give you an extra trade route, the Royal Navy Dockyard became even worse than it already was. And in my opinion, wasn't really good in the first place.
Agreed.
So England suffers from that problem. And I remember we talked about this before. Like, we need to buffer somewhat, maybe an extra economic policy slot will make her better, and I surely agree it would make it a lot better. But beyond that, they're not that amazing. I like the National Museum because it can hold 3 extra artifacts, and the bonus from their tourism from that is doubled, and that's a really good bonus in my opinion. I really think that that bonus will pretty much give you a tourism victory if you act accordingly to it. And in a deity game, that's really difficult. And that makes it even for this tier list, like on a deity list, it's really difficult to win a touristic game. And on the rest, they don't have any real bonuses, because you need to be lucky that you find another continent with enough place to settle and the logistics that you can get there and protect it well enough in the beginning and everything like that. That can be quite difficult unless you're lucky that the exact landmass where you're located, for example, has another continent right next to where you are. And because it is so, like Kyle said, circumstantial based, if it's going to be good or not, I can't say she's an amazing leader or anything close to that. She's literally below average.
I'm actually going to link this list in the show notes themselves. So if you're on your podcast player, you should be able to like flip to your show notes and get the link directly to this list. Now, keeping in mind, to Wouter's point, you know, this was submitted 3 months ago now, and it's what, March 12th? So it's been some time. And yeah, to quickly go over this very briefly, they listed God tier as Germany, Rome, Greece, strong tier, Samaria, Russia, Arabia, China, Greece, again, as Pericles there. And then average tier becomes Aztec, Congo, Egypt, Scythia, and they go on and on down the rest. And interesting that they put America in the weak tier as 17th on the list out of 20, putting them very low. Interesting to compare that to the graphs that we're talking about completion. And I guess, Wouter, that goes to your point saying it's probably some nationalistic pride that pulls America into one of the top positions here. Because America pulls in top when you were looking at Civ 5, and then they are, was it third in this other list? I think I clicked away from it. But they ranked in very, very high here in this list.
Yeah,
of,
number
completion.
3 for the other list, for Civ 6. And I have to admit that, like, America is not that strong in this game. Their bonuses are not that amazing. And I certainly don't see a perfect, like, oh, America can do this super well, so they will always win this way if you play it right. No, they don't have those truly specific bonuses. And that makes me wonder, yeah, is the nationalistic reasons the only reason why it's so high?
Tier list. We've talked about Australia being probably God tier. Where do you think Poland fits into this factor?
Either strong or God tier as well. They're really good.
Makes sense.
I just wanted to ask on a meta level, and Dan, I'll actually toss this to you first, and then Valter, if you'd like to chime in as well.
On a what level? A metal level? Like a heavy metal level?
No, like a meta, not a metal. We're not doing no heavy metal here.
I was like, okay.
On a meta level, do we need, what does it come down to? Because how do we balance these? Does everyone deserve to be on the same tier? Is that realistic to expect that everyone can be on the same tier? I mean, if you're just talking about leveling things out and kind of looking, I think we're just talking like our history with playing games like World of Warcraft and all that, that's something to balance. They always work on balancing classes so they're all equal, but that never happens. It's kind of unrealistic, at least that's what I've learned with video gaming in 2017. Does England need to be in the God tier? Where do you stand? Does everyone need to try and get up there, or how do you feel about that concept?
No, and I want to bring up my experience. I'm just going to interject here because I feel strongly about it. I want to bring up my experience specifically of the game that I played a lot, which I've talked about before, which is League of Legends. You don't want a character or a civilization. You don't want every character or civilization to be on God tier, as though it's some kind of Marxist tier system where everyone has the same bonuses and advantages, and they're all applicable on a godlike distribution, or whatever the word I'm looking for is. The philosophy of a lot of these companies, in order to kind of balance tiers, if you will, and this goes back to the original Dota that was published for Warcraft 3, is it's impossible to make everything super strong. So what you want to do is you want to make every Civ or champion or whatever OP. You want them all to be overpowered. So then at that point, the powers that you're able to extrapolate from those Civs or those characters then start to differentiate themselves. So if you have one that is just significantly overpowered and then one with an underwhelming bonus, like say Spain, for instance, then what you have is you have very very delineated tier list and a very obvious one. So the best way for them to kind of, I think, in my opinion, segment this is to keep the bonuses very distinct, but to make sure that each of the bonuses has an inherent level of strength to it. Because if you look at something like Spain's bonus, Treasure Fleet, it is not at all beneficial to you if you are playing a game that has one continent. Whereas if you look at Germany's bonus, I can't think of a situation where it's not beneficial to you, no matter what map type you're playing on. So Civ will never allow for all the civilizations to be on the same tier, because it's very situational to the map. But I don't think we should want them to be either, to that end.
I'm pulling this up right now because I'm curious, the Treasure Fleet bonus here. Why am I not getting any good results in this? Where is the Treasure Fleet outlined? Well, so is that says it has a continental bonus. Is that right for Treasure Fleet?
Yeah, the Treasure Fleet gives a bonus for trade route between multiple continents, gain bonus gold for routes to other civilizations, food and production for routes between your cities, and you can form armadas earlier than usual with mercantilism.
On a Pangaea map, you would get to take some advantage of that, because the game should segment it by continents, which is what I have a larger issue with as a whole, but I can save that for another day and another conversation. But I'm just not keen on how they delineate continents. But to your point, it's just, yeah, it's a very, very interesting way to look at it. Vouter, do you have any thoughts on how that works as well? This idea of should everyone be OP versus, you know, where do they fall in? I personally am of the party of they should lean into their strengths, and I just feel some civs are a little lackluster there.
Yeah, so I kind of agree with Dan. You should make every civ overpowered in a specific thing that they do really well, so that if you play the game well, you play into their strength and build up upon that. But there are a couple of civilizations who kind of lack in that regard. For example, France is one that completely lacks that in any regard. She is not super strong in anything. She is pretty much mediocre or maybe even beyond that in most things. So yeah, that's not that great. And I think they should buff those kinds of things. Like maybe she should have some faster spies or something like that. That's really powerful in a really specific set of things in a specific time frame of the game as well, which would make her all of a sudden competitive again with the rest. Not god tier or anything like that, but at least average.
And I agree wholeheartedly. Train for that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that if in France specifically, just to that end, France seems to always get the shaft. I thought they sucked in Civ 5 too, and I think that's really unfortunate because they're one of the great civilizations of world history. But you look at this idea that Wouter's saying of, yeah, and that Kyle, you said too, leaning into these strengths and making the individual strengths overpowered. I look at Sumeria as being like the chief example of that, right? Have either you guys, I mean, Wouter, I know that you played all the Civs on Deity. Have you gone deep into Sumeria and into their bonuses specifically?
Yeah, I have. And I really like their especially the epic quest one, which is a really good thing. Combined that with the war card that they have in the beginning, what you do, just as the AI, push out a lot of war cards, hunt for those barbarians, and that is your civilization bonus. That's what he is good at. That's what he should do. And that's how you should play him probably if you want to make the most out of it.
Yeah, epic quest is fantastic. So what it is when you capture a barbarian outpost, you receive a tribal village reward in addition to the usual gold. And those tribal villages are outstanding. Like, they're friendly to you. They give you, I believe, faith bonus as well as a gold bonus. They're fantastic. But of course, they necessitate you to play strong and to actually capture barbarian outposts, right? So they're overpowered, but only if you specifically go down that path.
That's a great way of looking at it. And I will say from experience in my recent multiplayer game with my friend, boy, Gilgamesh was really, the AI was really using those war carts all right for ages and
those
ages
are great,
and ages. So much bloodshed. Thank you, war carts, for what you did to us. Great. But it is interesting. Yeah. Let's see. So we were, I forget, honestly, I think Dan, maybe it was you that mentioned France getting the shaft in the previous game, or maybe that was you, Wouter, apologies. But in Civ 5, you're looking at this graph of completion. They actually ranked in pretty well. Now, that's probably possibly due to them being launched in the base game. But let's see. They are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. They were like 7th on the list of Civs that people completed games with. And that ranked in 2 above England. So, again, you know, poor old England. I found them to be very boring in Civ 5, to be honest. I really like their Ship of the Line unique unit, which I've actually expressed as kind of an issue with my version of England in Civ 6, is I think that their units get phased out very, very quickly, the Sea Beggar and the Red Coat. I just feel like the Red Coat comes at a historical point in the game that you are soon to be upgrading them to, like, infantry and beyond. Or at least that tends to be the case for me, that that's a point that my science kind of kicks up and beats it out. So I don't know. And I'm curious to see the future of modding, how this affects it, because people can theoretically, even in multiplayer games now, mod in a more fair system, if that's the word we want to use, a more interesting system. And there's also mods that are coming out that help rework the civics tree and your science tree. So I don't know. This is going to be interesting to see how this develops over time.
For sure. Maybe France and Civ 5 had to do with the fact that their leader was Napoleon, and everyone knows Napoleon, whereas I know that a lot of people, the feedback on Catherine de' Medici was like a who is this kind of feedback, so that might have something to do with it. But yeah.
Very possible. Oh,
definitely. I'm pretty sure that has a large part to do with it. But also in Civ 5, I don't think that France was super bad. They were average.
I don't even remember. I know I played with France a couple times there, but I barely remember it.
It was like an ability where you'd want them. Yeah, the chateaus and their unique ability, they wanted you to build tall. It's like something to do with having one city being particularly strong, right, Wouter? I think that's what it was.
Well, mostly it's focused upon the teaming bonuses were doubled as well. So you wanted to go for a lot of tourism pretty much combined with high culture from the chateaus.
Interesting. Oh boy, there's just so much interesting stuff when you look back at. I love this, Dan. I'm so glad you found this thing to begin with. Like these metrics are something great to discuss here. Because just comparing the stats between these sieves, you're really very, very interested to see why people pick the ones they pick. And I didn't even consider that they might be playing certain sieves because they just are more familiar with that leader. The fact that if it were a different leader that you might go for that more often. I mean, I guess it makes a lot of sense. People pick Napoleon for that very reason, but still interesting. And you know what we have not seen much of or any of recently is dual leaders coming to Civ 6. I'm not sure if that's on the horizon still. I kind of thought that was going to be an interesting signal when they did that with Greece. They did the split. But so far, they remain our only Civ that has two different leaders to it. Anyone have thoughts on why we might not have seen more of that, or if you think we're going to see more?
I do think we'll see more. I don't necessarily know why. Kyle, I know that you linked me, or us rather, for instance, that Nicholas II mod as an alternative Russian leader, which is a bit spurious to begin with if you want to have Nicholas II as your leader. But I hope that that's something they do. I think Russia would be an example of a civ where you could, you know, really fantastically roll out a secondary leader. Please don't just make it Catherine the Great. That's a cop out.
Yeah, that is.
But, you know, I do hope that they roll that out soon with one of the more prominent civs. You could do Germany and maybe give people Bismarck, which I know they want. You could do Rome and do one of the many Roman leaders. I don't know. I think that the material is there for them. And I would imagine, Wouter, I don't know what you think, but I would imagine that might be something we see in the next DLC.
I don't think necessarily in the next DLC. I think in the first proper expansion that they will go more to that, because the DLCs right now have been really focused on a certain scenario included with the DLC. And for a scenario, not necessarily will be with a civilization that's already there. They probably want to bring something completely new to the table, which means new civilization bonus on top of a new leader. But with the first expansion that should be coming out in about 6 months from now or something like that, I can expect that they put in more than just three new civilizations, but also a couple of extra leaders for the civilizations that are already there, because on the design front, it just takes less time.
That's a good point. And I guess, and this is maybe an idea for our listeners, if you guys want to write in and let us know who you think civ-wise, maybe not even just on gut instinct or what your wishes are, but historically speaking, who do you think might get another leader? And I guess if we look at the precedent they set with Greece, the difference between the two was one was going to be cultural focused, the other was going to be militaristic. I think that was it, right? I think that's why they did that split.
Both of them are cultural, but the one does it through military and the other one does it more through peace.
Ah, that's it. Okay, so peace and war there. Okay, thank you, Walter, because I was going to say they kind of both are cultural, thinking back. So what, historically, like, they're probably going to pick someone that took their country in a different direction, maybe? I mean,
yeah.
Dan, let me toss this to you very quickly before we head off to your historical minute here. But you mentioned Bismarck being a change. Do you see that as fitting that mold? Do you think that Bismarck would offer drastically different direction to the country? Because old Frederick right now seems pretty militaristic focused with his policy card slot and such. Do you think that fits our mold? And this is a theoretical mold.
No, that's fair. Bismarck would not offer much of a difference from Frederick if they're leaning into the historicity of it. I think that you're kind of limited, first of all, with some civs, just by the fact that, you know, what are you going to do for an alternative leader for Scythia? I mean, there have been other leaders for Scythia, but no one knows who they are. Same could be said for, like, Brazil with respect to Brazilian people, or Congolese with respect to Congolese people. You know what I mean? Like, people just aren't clamoring for alternative leaders. We were talking about France. I could see, if you want a leader that takes a civ in another direction, I could see them rolling out a DLC with France under someone like Charles de Gaulle. Or I don't think they do Napoleon again. You know, God forbid they did someone like Robespierre. I don't know, man, but I could see France in being taken in a more militaristic direction, or maybe even England being taken in a more militaristic direction. We could see the return of Churchill at some point. I think if England's not being played, and that has to do with some pretty unappealing bonuses. You could roll out Churchill and have it be just a really hard militaristic focus, because Churchill was a really crappy prime minister beyond World War II, so you'd have to focus on military. But one of those European civs with a well-documented history and with well-recognized leaders, I could see them really leading into, or maybe someone like China, who has just a very long and documented history.
Good point. I think
but you also run into another problem that, for example, for Russia, you can't make Lenin, for example, the alternate leader for Russia, mainly because one of the bonuses for Russia, the country, and so not the leader bonus, is the Lavra, which is religious based. And I don't think you want to play Lenin as a religious based guy.
Very good point. Very good point. And there's also, you know, there's also it becomes a bit dubious. I know that in the past, for instance, I think it was Civ 4 that China had Mao Zedong as one of the leaders.
It's Stalin too.
That gets dicey. And they had Stalin. Yeah, that gets dicey. I mean, there's a reason that you haven't seen Hitler as a German leader, right? I mean, that would get really, really dicey when you start getting leaders in there whose historical, the retrospective historical analysis of them is pretty negative. Although you can look at something like Civ 5 and see like Nebuchadnezzar, or you can see some of the other, I'm trying to think of who Civ 5 had. They had one leader, one obscure leader who people were really pissed off about. Let me look into it a sec. Just riff off that for a sec.
Was actually had a point that I wanted to make, and now I cannot think of it. Great, this is me riffing off of nothing.
But that's a point that I tried to make. It's like they put themselves into a certain corner with putting nation bonuses in there,
true,
and leader bonuses, but only one of them is a leader bonus, and therefore you kind of have to put leaders there that work well with that nation bonus as well. For example, France, that would go pretty well with, because the France Grand Tour, Garde Imperiale, and Chateau, those are general French traits that pretty much any leader that you put in there could work well with. And for Germany, that goes the same. Like, you, if you have Bismarck, you can give him the ability of Realpolitik or something like that, which he can use to, I don't know, play other nations out against each other. And whatever, the German bonuses work well with any leader. And that's my point with Russia. You because they have the Lavra, if you have a leader that somehow goes away from fate completely, it doesn't fit well together, because then you have like competing strategies within the same nation. Yeah. And that's not building one nation to become an OP nation in one specific direction, which you have to build upon. You have to figure out what they're actually trying to do with the nation and build upon that, which is, it's weird.
I think that's a great point. One thing I want to quickly interject there, Valter, I think is to think of fan feedback to exactly what you're saying of these nation traits versus leader traits. I mean, if they're going to try and sell these new, you know, things as DLC, I think they're going to have to be very careful about how they price it, because if you're only getting like a 50% change or something, like if you're only swapping a couple perks, I don't think it's fair to sell that at the same price as you would a brand new civilization like Poland. You know, I forget what Poland's $5 or something. Well, if you add another leader to Poland, it better be less than $5, because I can already play Poland. And I'm just playing like devil's advocate there. I'm not saying that they shouldn't do it. I'm just saying be prepared for some snarky fan feedback if you try and sell it at full value.
Absolutely, because it's only a 25% change of the country. The leader bonus is 1 out of 4 of the bonuses that you get as a whole. 3 for the country, 1 for the leader. And that's why I think you will see more of them in an expansion pack rather than a DLC itself.
That is an interesting idea. Dan, did you
By the way,
anything?
Yeah, it was Askia in the Songhai. He's a pretty he's a pretty dubious leader in history. But you know, that Civ 5 also had Attila the Hun and had Genghis Khan. So I mean, it's so situational, man. I think that, you know, in the modern lens, you don't want Stalin or Mao, because those things are still, you know, the effects are still very immediate and the history is still very familiar to us. Whereas someone like Askia or Pachacuti with the Inca, who I know also has a kind of a dubious historicity. Those are, I guess, a little bit more far away, and both geographically and historically. By the way, I brought up Pachacuti, probably my favorite historical note about Pachacuti. I remember learning about this in a South American history class. Pachacuti actually had a son named Tupac.
Oh, yes.
Yes, I know that.
Oh, that's a good note.
Which is awesome. Shout out to the Inca for the name Tupac, I guess. I guess it's an Incan name.
Yeah. Hey, guys, we're running a little bit short on time here. I think this is a great conversation, maybe even one to save for next week, too. But this idea of, you know, how PC, how politically correct do we have to be with some of these leaders? And maybe I would really actually like to pick up this conversation at another point, because I wonder if some of it has to do with them leaning into this idea that sometimes Civ is being used as a historical teaching tool in certain educational settings. There was some news about that around the time that Civ 6 was coming out, that some high school was using, I think, Civ 5 to kind of teach some things. Now, obviously, this is not the most historically accurate game in all of history, nor do I really expect it to be. But if you guys want, that'd be kind of something cool to talk about for next week's show.
Don't use it to teach government.
That's for sure. Dan,
absolutely.
Speaking of, do you want to tell us what your historical minute might be for this week?
It's a brief one, but it's a fun one. So I wanted to talk a little bit about the music of Civilization. Do you guys like the Civ 6 title song, Sonia di Voler?
I do.
Yeah, I really do.
Yeah, I think it's great, too. Do you remember the Civ 5 title song? Because Wouter said that they outsourced the music for Civ 5.
Bobby Yetu was 4.
Oh, Bobby Yetu was 4. Yeah.
Sorry, guys.
Yeah, I don't even remember the fifth one because it didn't stick.
It didn't stick, and all I remember is Terra Novum from Brave New World, because that's what I played the most of. And that one was really muted and really kind of bleh. But Baba Yetu, you bring up. Baba Yetu is actually a famous song, right? I mean, Civ 4, it was very, very well received to the point that it was nominated for a Grammy, actually. And it became the first video game soundtrack related instrumental accompaniment to be nominated for a Grammy, which is ironic when you think about some of the beautiful music from games like the Final Fantasy series. But Baba Yetu as a song, do you know what Baba Yetu translates to?
Something about, oh, God in heaven, something, I forget.
But yeah, absolutely. Yeah, Baba Yetu is just the Lord's Prayer in alternative language.
Ah, right.
Swahili, yeah, it's Swahili. Sorry, I said alternative language. I should be more respectful. It's just the Lord's Prayer. Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven, et cetera, et cetera. But Baba Yetu, the arrangement of it is so beautiful and so grandiose and majestic. And the Lord's Prayer, we definitely, I think, feel as being a bit more solemn and a bit more dignified. So I always just kind of thought that it was a beautiful take on that. And Baba Yetu is probably the best known Civilization song. It is probably I would definitely argue the most beautiful of all the main themes. And it was, you know, justly rewarded as such. It was given not just the Grammy nomination, but it was given some independent spirit award things, nominations, as well as some video game industry-based awards. So Baba Yetu, you can definitely still find it on YouTube for those of you who might not be familiar with Civilization 4. Who are new to the game, go check it out. Go give it a listen. It is a beautiful theme.
And there are many, I think there are a couple other takes and renditions of it on Spotify and iTunes and all kinds of stuff like that. I love that, Dan. That's awesome. The music to these games are great. And I think everyone's been complimenting the new Australian in-game theme that they plugged in. Do you guys have any thoughts on that one quickly before we move on?
Beautiful.
It's beautiful. It's Waltzing Matilda, actually. And it ramps up as time goes by. It starts off, as most of these songs do, very very slowly, but then it ramps up. And Waltzing Matilda is, of course, a famous Australian, I think it's a more modern song that speaks to the Australian colonial experience, but it's beautifully done.
They have great music. Guys, we're going to try something very new. We're very short on time, so Wouter, I apologize to cram you in here, but take your time. We're going to do a new little segment on the show, especially thanks to, well, first of all, just having Wouter here to begin with and his great expertise, but also with some of that awesome feedback from people saying they want some strategy. Wouter's going to do some, basically like a historical minute of his own, but a strategy minute and give us some light tips. So Wouter, what do you have lined up for us this week?
So, yeah, I'm trying to give some tips that should make your playstyle a little bit more refined, where it can be rough on the edges, and not only your playstyle, but also mine, because these are usually things that I encounter in my playstyle that I was like, oh, I really have to start doing this because that will make everything better. And the tip for this week is a very simple one, and everybody probably knows it's in the game, but I don't think people use it enough, and that is map pins. Map pins are an amazing tool that got added in Civ 6. We didn't have it in Civ 5, but I believe it was in Civ 4, or it was with mods in Civ 4. And I use it aggressively there as well, and I think people should do it here as well. And what you can do with it can be various. You can literally plan out where you want your districts, but I would recommend you to use it as small reminders on the map. Like, there's a barbarian encampment you saw there, but you don't have the resources to deal with it. Pin that. Make sure that you remember that the barbarian encampment is there before it starts sending 20 horse archers against you and wreck your whole city. And the same goes with other things, like you're building a worker, and usually you build that worker with a couple of tiles in mind to improve. But time goes by, a war gets declared, you get distracted, and you kind of forget what you actually want to improve with that worker, and you spend all this charge and like, oh, dang it, I forgot to improve that tile where I actually built the worker for. So place a map pin on there, make a small reminder for yourself. And just the act of placing the map pin there already brings it enough in your memory that you probably will remember when that worker is built. But that's a good thing. That means you didn't waste your builder, and it means you just became a little bit more efficient in your empire.
I think that's a fantastic tip. And if I can throw one thing in, Wouter, they implemented it for multiplayer too, which is awesome. You can share pins between your team, which I think is very, very intelligent, and I like to see that come out. So if we're going to
coordinate with your team members,
Exactamundo. And I like it. It pops up in chat too to tell people that you actually made a pin. And I think it's like kind of in-game hyperlinked or anchored, so it like will take them to it, I think, if they click on it. So
yeah, you can link it to a player in chat by clicking on the pin and share it to chat or something like that, or text to chat. And then they can click on it, and that way, if you're, for example, on a team in a multiplayer session and you don't know where each other are, just ping your homepage with a pin, and the other player can directly see where it is.
Super smart. That's a good tip. Thank you very much for that, Wouter. I'm really excited to start going forward with those. Those are going to be really cool, and I think our listeners are going to find them very, very handy just as we go along. There's so many things to Civ that I think sometimes you can forget things that you've learned along the way. I know you teach me things all the time, and then I will implement it, but then I forget something else in the process. So I love this new little segment. You're going to keep my brain fresh and new, and hopefully I can do something and become a good player eventually, someday, maybe. Emphasis on one day. But for this episode, kind of wraps it up. Want to let you guys know, again, we're going to be editing all of our things on Patreon. So that is patreon.com/civcast. Go check that out. I am really going to have that as a goal in mind to get this done by the end of day, which is Sunday. So Monday morning, you should be able to go there, subscribe to new goals if you're interested, or new tiers. We would love that. It really helps support the show. It helps us pay off our podcast hosting and also allows us to invest in better technology and software going forward. So everything you donate helps, and we're trying to make this as beneficial to you as possible so that you're getting something really cool out of it, something that you find value in. So again, that's patreon.com/civcast. As always, the website is kyledempsterstudios.com/civcast. Over there, you'll get links to the show. You'll find the Civcast challenge rules, newly updated to reflect the correct info. Lame Kyle for being slow. Also, you can check out Dan's new show that he put out last week. Dan, do you want to talk about RP Gold for a sec?
RP Gold, we highlight RPGs, role-playing video games from the era 1993 to 2006, everything from Super Nintendo to PC to PlayStation, give you all those warm, nostalgic, fuzzy feelings. Yeah. Last week with our first episode, we did the Super NES classic Final Fantasy VI. Next week when we showcase, we might be sticking in the Super NES era with another Square game, but you will have to tune in to find out.
Ooh. Okay, everyone, keep your eyes peeled for that. So again, kyledempsterstudios.com, you'll find all the info. There's links to Civcast, links to RP Gold, links to all the things we're doing. I think Wouter and I are even doing Hearts of Iron today. Is that right, Wouter? Do we both have time for that, right? I do. Do you?
Yeah, it should be today.
Woot woot. Okay, so also at the top of the page, you can find a link to the YouTube channel where Valter and I will be recording an episode. We now the internet gods are favorable to us. We can do that. So if you are a Paradox fan or a fan of Grand Strategy overall, check it out. Valter's going to school me in how to play this game. We're going to play as the Soviet Union, and I'm going to try to... okay, I'm actually going to try and execute everyone. So that'll be fun. Look forward to that bloodshed. Feedbacks. Send it to civcastpodcast@gmail.com. We love getting it. There's also a link on the website, as I've mentioned before. But please send that in. We love it. We highlight it on the shows. I still got a little bit of a backlog, but, you know, we're trickling it out over time. It's nice to give everyone their moment in the sun. And head over to our Reddit, our subreddit. That is r/civcast. So very, very easy to find. Valter's over there sharing some strategy tips. And we're listening to what you guys have to say. It's a nice longer format, so you can write to us in more detail. But that's going to do it for this episode. So until next week, everyone, just one more turn. You're listening to the Kyle Dempster Studios Network. For more shows like this, visit KyleDempsterStudios.com.